Light Pollution News, Episode 3, Ice Crystal Light Beams. In today's episode, I'm joined by conservationist and avid bird watcher Caitlin Evans. We take a look at some of the most interesting news articles to grace the topic of light pollution each month. This month, why falling asleep with the lights on is bad for your health, how red lighting could rewild night skies plagued by light pollution, urban light pollution could be more of a threat to marine ecosystems than we imagined, how light pollution is rising faster than anyone predicted, and much more. As a reminder, you may find this podcast with show notes and news article links and much more over at our website at lightpollutionnews.com. First up, we have an article from Joshua Sokol of Science. Light pollution is drowning the starry night sky faster than thought. The problem is worse than we believed, says John Berentine, an independent dark sky researcher based in Arizona, who didn't participate in the study. Researchers use a satellite imaging system known as the Visible Infrared Imaging Radiometer Suite. That is a mouthful. They use this to identify and chart the progress of nighttime lighting brightness on the environment. In 2017, data derived from VIRS led them to calculate that light pollution was growing at a rate of 2% per year. However, the VIRS is unable to identify blue wavelengths, most commonly associated with most LED fixtures nowadays. Researchers believe that 2% is a gross undercount. To fix this, Christopher Kaiba, a German physicist, teamed up with the Globe at Night program, a citizen science project where individuals can report the number of stars they see at night from their location. It's now estimated that sky glow has been increasing at a whopping 6.5 to 10.4% per year in Europe and North America. It's pretty shocking, Kaiba says. Per the article, I quote, "Despite warnings about light pollution, communities have continued to add artificial lighting. You put together cheap lighting and fear of the dark, and people are choosing not to preserve darkness."
I think they gave a pretty stark example of this in the article, and they said, "A child born today in a light polluted area could see about 250 stars, but by their 18th birthday, they'd only be able to see 100 stars. So you'd be losing more than half of those stars in just a mere 18 years.
Why does it matter? Why does it matter if people see the stars? I'll tell you why I think it matters if people see the stars. Human creativity is only as good as the environment it's in. And be able to see the stars and have curiosity constantly churning. And as a kid, if you're a kid out there, you see all these different stars and planets, the actual something as simple as even in your daytime environment, if you're out looking at, you know, birds, or you're looking at a tree, or even looking at a little waterway cutting through a little ravine, the creativity, the creative juices that come out as a kid are there. And if you take away that natural environment, which is another effect that light pollution is having, you're taking away more of the natural environment and you're replacing it only with man-made environmental items that have limiting curiosity impact, at least in my mind, that have a limiting ability for someone to get curious about. You can build all the buildings and everything, but a lot of the problems is that people become subjects of their environment and they can't see outside of that environment. That's my thought. Caitlin, do you have any commentary, any thoughts that you would have on that?
I think seeing the stars also helps to remind us of our place in this vast universe, and you know, helps kind of.
Are you saying that we're not the only ones here? That the human race isn't the epicenter of the whole universe?
Well, I was trying to say is that it helps remind us of our place in the in this vast universe. You know, and helps us to kind of give us perspective on things and realize, you know, how small we are in this world, and helps kind of give us a view outside of ourselves sometimes when we need to be reminded that sometimes the world doesn't revolve around us and there's this vast universe out there.
Well, maybe not the universe, but I think the world might revolve around us these days. So that it is the light pollution issue when it comes to star count, I think, is a good canary in a coal mine, because it's indicative of the actual problem before people see the impact downstream, see the impact in something as simple as your pollinators or your the ecosystem you live in. This is a easy way to see that you have an environmental issue without actually experiencing the negative effects of that environment.
And this is also a great messaging tool for organizations like the IDA, the International Dark Sky Association, or other similar organizations, because this is a good, you know, real life visible thing that people can actually look at and imagine. If you tell them, you know, in 18 years from now, you'll only be able to see half the stars above your home that you currently do, that's a pretty real awakening for people.
I think even here we can look out and you can see a visible decrease in stars over the last few years with the LED transformation. You'll see, I think on any given night now, we might see about, I don't know, 54 stars out there. Before then, maybe it was a little more. But it definitely feels like there's less stars, and there's completely no stars over the city of Philadelphia where we live. There's no stars over the actual city itself. Moving on, I have two quick articles that are related to this. Red lighting could rewild night skies plagued by light pollution. Sasa Woodruff of the Boise State Public Radio is doing an excellent series, the After Dark series. I highly recommend you take a listen. You can find a link in our show notes on our website or in this article in this podcast show notes. Jesse Barber of Boise State University studies how light affects animals and insects. According to Barber, the brain utilizes blue light to control and signal animal-human circadian rhythms. While Barber works with many different animals, he's particularly fond for bats, as they represent a prime example of how light pollution affects vertebrates. Some bats actually avoid lights, and others are actually attracted to the insects pulling around the lights. Such bats tend to exhaust themselves and become quick fodder for bat-hunting animals. At a small scale, Barber points out that recent studies confirm that non-red outdoor lighting is connected to insect decline. Red light, however, is less perceptible by animals and insects, and thus can provide an ecological solution outdoor lighting. And I think they're putting this into effect at some national parks as a solution for to provide adequate lighting at night for the people attending or in the actual national park, but also as an ecological solution to retrofit some of the bad lighting that they had in place.
Yeah, and I think this phenomenon of insects flocking to outdoor lights is something we've all seen, whether it's street lights or like field or stadium lighting. You'll always see a swarm of insects around there, and sometimes once in a while you'll even see bats under there. So it definitely is an issue, and you know, it's something we've all seen everywhere around us.
Yeah, a good point in that radio piece is also that the bats that don't like any light at all will be pushed further and further away from the habitable areas. And that becomes a problem for the actual species if they can't find a spot that is void of that light. The survival of that species becomes in question. Next up, light pollution is killing desert rodents. Judy Siegel Iskovich of the Jerusalem Post, this comes all the way from the Middle East. Light pollution has been tied to decline in two types of desert rodents, mice in particular. According to the School of Zoology at Tel Aviv University, researchers tested 96 mice for 10 months in an outdoor lab, subjecting them to low-intensity exterior lighting with a variety of wavelengths, which is colors. Researchers conducted this experiment twice in 2 years, expecting the mice to live out their average span of 4 to 5 years. Quoting from the article, on two unrelated occasions in two different exposures, and when exposed to white light, all the animals died within several days. Absent of genetic or environmental issues, it's believed that the white light of modest intensity left them with reduced protections against an unidentified pathogen. Other studies involving these mice found that artificial light at night disrupted reproductive cycles, as these mice began to breed in non-optimal times of year, not in summer conditions, but actually year-round in the winter, where it wasn't an adequate time to be birthing new mice, and also provided stress and mortality to the species. Further, as if that wasn't enough, the cortisol levels in mice appeared to rise when exposed to blue light and lower when exposed to white light. So this is an interesting little study coming out of little study on desert rodents coming out of Middle East. All right, moving on to the next article, the next series, the next set. So why falling asleep with lights on is bad for your health? Richard Seaman of the Washington Post, in a 2022 study by Phyllis Z of the Center for Circadian and Sleep Medicine at Northwestern's Feinberg School of Medicine, it was found that sleeping in light increased an individual's insulin resistance and kept the individual's heart rate high the entire night. The study included 20 healthy, presumed to be college-age individuals who reportedly slept great under overhead lights about the same brightness as a hotel hallway light. Per the article, the brightness was not sufficient for comfortable reading, but it was still bright. Z believes that the study reveals the human brain actually becomes aware of relatively low light and somehow ties this together to its fight or flight system. Another 2022 study, Z found that any light increased the prevalence of obesity, diabetes, and hypertension. This particular study on young people is surmised to have much greater impact as one ages. Lastly, it should be noted per the article that light does not need to appear blue to contain short wavelength light. Classic LEDs appear white, for example, but contain a lot of short wavelength light, as Christine Bloom of the Center for the Chronobiology at the University of Basel states, shortwave lighting is very effective at telling our biological clock it's not time yet to sleep, further surmising that such circadian disruptions could lead to mood disorders, cognitive impairments, metabolic issues, and cancer risks. Wow.
So all of these in the article, they said, are linked to the disruption of the circadian rhythm. And when your circadian rhythm is disrupted, your melatonin production decreases. And melatonin is what helps to tell your body that it's time to prepare for sleep. And so if you're not producing melatonin, you're not getting into a good restful sleep that you normally would. And the participants in these studies, they showed the ones that slept under the light, they spent much less time in the REM, the rapid eye movement stage of sleep, which is where your most restful and restorative sleep occurs. And so since they weren't getting into this phase of sleep, you know, they found that it does lead to health consequences down the road. And they did have some suggestions for how to sleep better at night if you do find yourself in situations where you do have lights on at night. They said 2 to 3 hours before bed, you should avoid screens. But if you are using your phone or your computer, that you can put them on the night shift mode, which shifts it to warmer colors. Because as was mentioned earlier, blue light has the biggest negative effect on melatonin levels.
Yeah, night shift mode is pretty amazing these days. You can do a lot of really great warm lighting with your, if you have Windows PC, Windows 10 and Windows 11 has a manual adjuster to see how warm you want that lighting. And also you can, if you want to have a manual control on your phones, at least with an iPhone or iPad, the actual time when it switches over to its warm lighting, if you just want to have a manual control instead of just waiting for the clock to kick in, you can set it in an accessibility function in the actual device itself and just double or triple click on a button, and you'll be able to change the screen's color from white to whatever you want it to be. I use that a lot for any astronomy or any dark stuff, any nighttime stuff we're doing. That way my eyes stay dark adapted and I can triple click on my iPhone and everything's still red and I don't lose any of that adaptation. So, you know, another interest is another great example of how we don't realize that our technology actually affects us. You know, it's nothing wrong with the technology. I think it's great to be able to walk outside at night and see where you're going. It's great to be able to, knock out some work or watch a movie or do something portable, like with your iPad or something. It's just, we have to be aware of how the technology affects us and how, you know, we have to be mindful if we're going to do things, or if you're going to have communities set up new street lighting or any kind of, if you're setting up a fixture on your house and you're, you know, trying to see when you take the dog out, wonder how you want to do that, what temperature it should be. These all play into it. The potential health effects should be first and foremost in making decisions with our technology.
And this is true as well for light bulbs that you use within your home. Lights that you use at night, you want to have a warmer, more orange yellow tone, because that'll emit less of the blue light. And so that'll get you ready for sleep more easily than using a bright white light.
Have you ever had this where you are staying at an Airbnb and you wake up and you didn't realize the lights were like pure white until you have to say, go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, maybe get a glass of water, and you flick on light and it hurts your eyes because it goes from being dark, pitch dark, to being daytime in a matter of seconds, less than a second. And your eyes are just like cringing. Your eyes get all tightened up, man. It's painful just to think about. Okay. Next up, yellow off-road lights work, and here's why. Jonathan Klein of The Drive. This is an interesting article I decided to include because it shows at a very practical level how light color affects our day-to-day lives. Jonathan Klein takes on the question of why off-roading vehicles use yellow fog lights rather than white. What he finds is that the warmer fog lights present a distinct advantage when driving through precipitation, including rain, fog, or snow. And it's due to our biology. The human eye is built two kinds of photoreceptors, rods and cones. During the daytime, we use our cones. At night, we use our rods. Actually, when it's dark, when it's lacking artificial light, we use our rods. Rods are more sensitive to motion, which the article includes as things such as blowing snowflakes, fog, or raindrops. While white and yellow light will scatter equally in precipitation events, our eyes will be drawn more to the fog, rain, or snow particles due to our rod's natural attraction to blue-green colored peaks. Using warm light reduces distraction and allows a driver to better assess the circumstances. Huh.
They also noted in this article that your pupil size decreases as you go from red to a white or blue wavelength light. And a larger pupil means that your eye is able to take in more light. A smaller pupil, your eye takes in less light. So when you have a yellow amber lighting, your pupil is going to be larger and your eye can take in more light versus using a white light. Your pupil is going to be smaller and you'll be able to take in less light.
So maybe it's a good case for having warmer lights instead of the 5,000, 6,000 Kelvin you'll see in a car headlight. It's a good case, at least for your fog lights, to have a warmer light.
Yeah, and he brings up the good question, why are all newer car headlights this bright white-blue color when it seems like using a more yellow tone would be much more beneficial to driving at night and having better visibility?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Yeah. I think in dry weather, the bright white works perfectly fine. But when you get into anything with precipitation, at least here in the northeast part of the U.S. and presume Canada, you have a lot of moisture, right? We always have rainstorms coming through and a lot of moisture, a lot of dampness, a lot of humidity. Why don't we see a trend more towards warm lights out here? I guess time will tell, but maybe we can start that changeover. Here's an interesting article from the Central Oregon Daily. The Friday, there was a rainstorm that produced freezing rain that sent light beams shooting into the sky. Residents in Central Oregon were treated to a very modern, unique sky phenomenon, light beams. Light beams that shot directly up like they were emanating from the clouds, deriving from streetlights as ice crystals caused the refraction spikes. It appears to have been met with excitement and glee by many of the Central Oregon residents. Perhaps as a quite surreal example of modern day human impacts on nighttime environment. You have pillars of white light that looks like a really bad photo editing job. Honestly, you have streaks of white light perfectly vertical in these images. If you are able to take a look again over on our website, lightpollutionnews.com.
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty cool, honestly. Like, I've never seen anything like that. It does, like you say, look kind of fake. Like, doesn't look like that could be something that really happens, but apparently they got to see it.
Modern technology creates many interesting things, huh? Now you can have a light show when it is just freezing rain, sleeting outside. So real quick, I saw this article. I just wanted to touch on it real fast. Urban light pollution is a danger for marine ecosystems. Tim Smith of The Conversation. A preliminary research by Tim Smith of the Plymouth Marine Laboratory identified that light pollution affects 1.9 million square kilometers of the world's seas, approximately 3.1% of global economic zones, impacting at a depth of 1 meter into the sea. Such light impacts at 6 times the intensity of moonlight. Smith and team had just started their research, so they have yet to identify any biological impacts. However, previous studies observed much in line with terrestrial studies, whereby exposure to artificial light interferes with reproductive cycles of fish, can interfere with turtle hatchlings being able to reach the ocean safely, and actually scares off zooplankton, which are a key part of marine food chain. And as they move away from ships from brightly lit ships down to a depth of 200 meters, that's pretty deep.
Another interesting fact from this article that I didn't know is that several coral species release their reproductive cells on cues from the lunar cycle. And so I would assume that this artificial light at night, since it's so much brighter than the moon, would negatively affect the coral reproduction for some of these species.
It's definitely going to be some research just to follow up to see how Mr. Smith makes out with his studies on down the line. I presume that they'll be going into more of the biological studies after doing the initial assessment. In the good news, there is a Boulder City, Nevada, aims to reduce light pollution and increase dark sky tourism. Shannon Miller of Las Vegas Weekly. Boulder City, Nevada is looking to capitalize on its dark sky tourism, a rather new type of tourism that derived from our inability to see the Milky Way or even hell, stars, anywhere remotely close to most of us, to where most of us live. By utilizing $1.9 million from the U.S. Economic Development Administration, the city plans to update its lights in a way conducive to protecting wildlife and saving energy. Boulder City is aiming to be the first town in Nevada that attains a IDA Dark Sky Community designation. This falls in line with how Boulder City views itself as a gateway town to Lake Mead and other outdoor recreational opportunities. Most importantly, the enhanced lighting hopes to showcase natural beauty while retaining historical character and safety. And
they're hoping that this IDA designation, if they succeed in getting it, that would lead to an increase in tourism for dark sky tourism for the area.
Yeah, you have to think of everything else that goes on Lake Mead. It's a very popular place. Tons of activities you can do there.
It's actually the 5th most visited park in the country.
Oh, 5th. I did not know that. But yeah, it's a great spot. I think I had Thanksgiving there 1 year, coming out of the Grand Canyon. I think that's where we ended up having Thanksgiving. But yeah, it's a great initiative. And you know, the more we can have these outdoor preserves, essentially, where people can go and actually recreate. We were speaking about this the other day, having the ability to go out and actually recreate. I know what was the book you're reading? Was the
Grandma Gatewood,
right? So for those of you who are listening and aren't aware of Grandma Gatewood, Gatewood was the first woman who completed the whole Appalachian Trail.
Yep, she thru-hiked the whole Appalachian Trail, starting... She was 67 when she started the trail.
So she's 67 when she started the trail, but the trail itself, I mean, that talking about recreation, that like to go outside and actually have an adventure, to go outside and have a new experience. I think that's what, you know, we miss so much of these days. I do want to touch on this one article here. Bill aims to dim artificial light from California's night skies. CBS Bay Area. State Assembly member Alex Lee of San Jose is back at it. If you recall last episode, California Governor Gavin Newsom vetoed a law that would implement rather modest updates on state-owned buildings under the guise of fiscal constraints and also under the long told tale of security and crime prevention concerns. However, the initial bill, 2382, carved out exceptions for prisons, first responders, and buildings concerned with vandalism. Seems like pretty big carve-outs to me. The current provision in a newly proposed AB 38 does appear to provide one notable exception for billboard lighting. To date, there has been no movement on this bill, which was proposed in December of 2022. The previous bill, 2382, obtained bipartisan support. Much in line with the previous bill, this bill would promote the use of energy savings through motion-activated lighting and reduce exterior lighting by upwards of 50% after 11 p.m.
And supporters of this bill hope that through this bill, they can demonstrate that buildings can be safe while using light appropriately and turning light off when it is not needed. And they're hoping to set the example for other places in doing this.
Yeah, I think the dark sky movement gets a bad rap in that people think that you're going to take away their lights. And in actuality, it's just putting the right lights in the right space and using the right amount of light. It's not taking away lights. Here in Philadelphia, it seems that everyone thinks a bright light can solve all of your problems. If someone is willing to walk up to your house and you have cameras and you have bright lights, I don't really think the lights are going to be the issue. I don't think any light has ever scared anyone who's going to break into your house at night. You know, if they're going to do that in a time when most people are home, then lights probably aren't that key driver in crime. However, what you do want to do is you want to provide a space for people to be able to walk safely and be able to not trip over stuff and be able to, people with maybe some visual impairments, they won't have problems as they're out at night. And I think that's where we bridge it. And that's where you have proper lighting with the proper amount of lighting, and you're not creating glare. You're just creating an easy way for people to actually to move throughout the night. So finally for today, for our news segment, in Texas Hill Country, darkness enlightens and inspires. This comes to us from Henry Gass of the Christian Science Monitor. We're going to close out with some inspiration tonight. The Hill Country of Central Texas is currently experiencing growth, but residents want to retain some of what provides its charm. Home to some of the most protected night skies in the U.S., the city of Blanco, Texas became the fifth dark sky community designation from the International Dark Sky Association. A lot of people assume that we're just asking people to turn off their lights and live in darkness, and that's not the truth, Mr. Hummel, who spearheads the Dark Skies Initiative for the McDonald Observatory. To an oil and gas company, it does make sense for them to adopt a night sky-friendly lighting strategy. He adds it saves them money, it's better for the workplace safety, and it's better for the health of their workers. For leaders in the Hill Country, opting for warmer lighting rather than the deliriously 4,000 to 5,000 temperatures that we're so familiar with here in Philadelphia, allow the residents to experience and protect the beauty of an area without compromising at all on safety and security. In the end, the city of Blanco hopes to preserve dark skies as places of curiosity and solace for future generations.
And one point that was mentioned a few times in this article is that they're working hard to try and preserve dark skies while not preventing development, because they realize development is going to happen. So Austin is 1 hour east and San Antonio is 1 hour to the south. And so there is encroaching development from both sides. So they're trying to preserve their dark skies while also understanding that development is inevitable. Also, this is going to become the world's largest dark sky reserve, which is overlapping with one of the world's largest energy producing areas as well.
Yeah, it doesn't that good to show you that you can still have industry and responsible lighting? Oftentimes, I believe wholeheartedly that the only fight against responsible lighting is the people just don't want to have, they don't want to be tasked with the time and effort to actually just think out what they're doing. They just want to put up a cheap light, light up an area, and they don't want, even want to think about it. They just want to walk away. Versus all you need, it's not hard to do dark sky lighting. You don't have to use a lot of wattage. You don't have to use a lot of, you don't have to get the biggest and brightest light. Oftentimes those big and bright lights make it actually more difficult to see something. If everything is paved in stadium or prison lighting, as you see at a gas station up the street, or as you'll see, you know, when you're driving by some of these PennDOT stations or big truck depot areas, if it's all paved in this bright white light, you can't actually discern any of the contrast of anything in that area because everything is being blanketed in this, in what's essentially daytime lighting. I experience this a lot when I'm biking through the city. I actually would prefer to be a little dimmer than having about 4,000 Kelvin bright, bright street lights. And then on top of that, they have decorative lighting that is very bright and actually is just about as bright as anything as the lights themselves. When you're biking through city at night, it's actually better to have a little bit less light. It'll be nicer to have it in a 3,000, 2,000 range, as was with the sodiums, because you can make out the contrast of headlights. You can make out the contrast of other bikers coming up with their lights. When it's all white at night, it's really hard to, you don't have that, nothing pulls your eye that quick. And, you know, it opens you up to actually some dangerous spots.
Yeah, which is something that was mentioned in the California bill article. They were saying that having less bright lighting will actually help improve safety because that way you're not blinded by the light and you can see into the shadows. You don't have all these blind spots that you would if you were under a super bright light. So having dimmer lighting would actually help to increase safety.
There's an individual here. This is a lot of the effort for preserving the nighttime skies in Blanco was driven by one individual.
Yeah, it was largely driven as a grassroots effort by Wayne Gosnell. He and his wife moved to Blanco because of the dark skies, and he is becoming increasingly concerned over development in neighboring cities. So about 15 years ago, he started setting up light meters in town to monitor the changes in the sky brightness over time. And, you know, through his grassroots effort and, you know, other partnerships, they've been able to work on getting this designation for this town.
Yeah, it's impressive work. And so much of community activism comes from the driver of one or two individuals in that community. And it's amazing what one individual can do. So kudos to this fellow. This is such a great story. And if you guys want to read more, definitely please go over to our website, lightpollutionnews.com. I do have one little article I do want to sneak in here because this is a good one. And if you're interested in learning more about, just quickly jump over to our show notes or to our website, lightpollutionnews.com. And first off, we do not take any money for this podcast. If we did, it would be done much better. Everything would be much more professional, but we don't. But I do want to put this out here because I love it. And I'm sure, you know, people listening to us, they might actually get a kick out of this. The Best Hotels for U.S. Stargazing by Erica Mailman of Time Out. If you're looking for a good spot to sleep under stars, Erica has identified a few places. One of them is this place, the Kiwanen? I don't know. We have to ask some Michiganders as they're probably cringing and writing us hate mail right now. They have a 1934 rustic lodge with, I think, 24 units that have some food on site, and they actually do like moonlit snowshoe hikes, a night sky photography workshops, new moon parties. You can rent a telescope. You can do more. You might even be able to see the northern lights it mentions in there. That sounds like a perfect trip. Wow. And other honorable mentions in that same article include Scottsdale, Arizona, and Greenville, Maine. But that Michigan one sounds pretty good. So we have to find our way up there. I think that could be a good time. Again, we don't take any money on this. If we did, the show would be a lot higher quality and everything would be done much better. So if you're willing to sponsor us on that, we'd be definitely down with that. But hey, I do have two last articles here, and these are separate from our main news piece. One is our notable research article for the month, and that is outdoor artificial light at night and human health, a review of the epidemiological studies, multiple authors, Journal of Environmental Research. This is an interesting one, and it showcases the dilemma that you have when you're studying anything related to light and its impacts on people. Anything from I know that the crime studies have a lot of problems. They have a difficult time with this, and people can prove one thing either way because it's very difficult to tease out light. But here we go. Authors undertook a non-systematic review, 51 epidemiological studies that looked at artificial lighting at night to disease occurrence in humans, as was published since 2009. These studies included work on incidence of breast cancer, other cancers, sleep and circadian rhythm disorders, obesity and cardiovascular diseases, mental disorders, infectious diseases, and complications during pregnancy and childbirth. The authors conclude that overall, these appear to be a link between ALN, artificial light at night, and human health. However, to the effect that the link can be teased out appears to be lacking in these studies. The methodology of these studies needed to include more to really tease out that link and to identify the gravity of that link. The authors found that many of the papers lacked light at night measurements, including wavelength considerations. Rather, they looked at the volume of light and they didn't necessarily take into wavelength considerations, and they appeared to at times lack external factors. This didn't include all articles. Overall, the tendency seemed to prove that there is a link, but there needs to be more work to understand what that link is and what's the driver of that link.
Yeah, and how it might specifically relate to wavelengths or intensities or qualities of the light that were not necessarily measured but could provide further insight into these.
And finishing up, we have our Afraid of the Dark article of the month, because at the end of it, you know that everyone who puts up the super bright light at night is really just afraid of the dark. That's my quote. Maybe not the official tenor of everyone else in the light pollution world. But yeah, that's what I feel. So let's just go with it. Are your street lights out? Here's why so many LA streets are dark. Christine Richer of NBC Los Angeles. So LA has a serious problem with their street lights. It's huge. Copper thieves have decimated LA street lighting, reducing the city's lighting by 7,000 street fixtures. LA is trying to fix the outages, but currently doesn't have the capital to put new ones up. It's been going on for years. The story by the NBC Los Angeles fits the bill for classic fear-mongering. All TV news articles seem to do this, and they start off surrounding a man who saw thieves attempting to take steel catalytic converter from his truck parked in North Hollywood. First off, thieves can do this anywhere under light. I have seen this number of times, a number of security cams under bright streetlights of thieves that just pull up. Maybe they'll put a car on one side, or they'll park a car on the side and just quickly get it in and out. They don't necessarily need to be in the dark for this. It can happen. It tends to happen more at night because their cars are there, but it doesn't necessarily have to be in a dark spot. I know right down the street from us, at the end of our street, we have a lot of issues with cars down there, and that part down there is very, very, very lit. We don't have numbers on this, but
There was actually a recent study in the UK that found that vehicle-related thefts decrease when streetlights were turned off after midnight. So they did a study. Some control streets they left lights on all night; other ones they turned off the lights at midnight. And they found that in the streets where they turned the lights off, theft from vehicles dropped. And in the neighboring well-lit streets, theft increased in the well-lit streets. So it's pointing to the conclusion that theft is occurring in the more brightly lit areas.
And that's also, you have to think about the premise of this article here. If thieves are taking a copper out of streetlights, they're doing it where there's light, right? And the reason why this guy was able to actually see his car being broken into was partly probably because the alarm was going off. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but he could probably also make out some light. Like he probably caught it caught someone using a flashlight, because you can't work without light. You need light to do work. They did have one thing here, though, that was very important. And this goes back to what I said about having a proper amount of lighting and responsible, smart approaches to your lighting. One of the residents that was interviewed, Jenny Seiden, was worried about walking at night because she has a low vision issue. And you have vision issues. It's very important that we have people, that we have a setup where people can actually see when they're moving at night. You don't want to, again, just because we're talking about light pollution here doesn't mean we want to get rid of lights. It means we want to have responsible, smart approach to lighting.
Yeah, and want, you know, people like Ginny to feel safe and comfortable walking outside at night.
Right. Well, thank you for staying with us for this episode of the Light Pollution News Podcast. I greatly appreciate it. You can learn more about this show by going to lightpollutionnews.com and definitely check out anything we have over there. Follow up with us. You can read all of our show notes. All of the links to the articles we discussed are in the show notes. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you like the show, definitely give us a shout out, and have a great next month, folks. Thank you.